This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on February 2nd, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
February 19th, 2012 meeting. Vice Chair, do you have a motion?
I do, Madam Chair. I move that we approve the minutes for the January 19th, 2012 meeting as set forth in agenda document number 12-08.
Go ahead and call in. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you. Motion passes. So, happy Groundhog Day, everybody. I think it's appropriate because the three AOs that we have on the agenda are the same, three of the same that we had on the agenda at the last public meeting.
Is Bill Murray coming?
He's on his way.
Oh, good.
He's meeting with Stephen Colbert right now. But actually, in some ways, this is a good thing because what we try to do, and we've been trying to do this now for a number of years under everybody's leadership, is to put AOs on the public meeting agenda well before the deadline. So it gives us an opportunity to discuss the AOs with the requestor and think about them and hopefully have a vote, you know, the next go around. So it's not altogether a bad thing. It doesn't mean that, you know, we punted something or couldn't make a decision. Often it just means that we needed some more time to consider what requester has told us in their meeting. So we'll give it another whirl today and see if we can come up to a conclusion on these three advisory opinions. And my colleagues have agreed we're going to make a bit of a change to the order on the agenda today. We're going to start off with New Mexico Voices for Children, and we'll have a couple of questions for counsel and Mr. Martinez, and then after that, we're going to go to Western Representation PAC, and then we'll take a brief recess to consider the conversation with New Mexico and to also consider talking a little bit more about Stan Louder, and then we'll come back after the recess and discuss the Stan Louder advisory opinion and also the New Mexico one. So we will try to get Sarah Berger and Troy Martinez on the phone. Again,
I think you just called us. This is Sarah Berger and Troy Martinez.
Good morning, Ms. Berger. This is Sean Worth from the Federal Election Commission. We have just gaveled the meeting to order. The chair did, and so we are ready to take up your advisory opinion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berger and Mr. Martinez, for joining us this morning. After a brief presentation by the General Counsel's office, we will have a couple of questions for you, and then we anticipate having a recess and then voting on your advisory opinion a little bit later in the meeting. And at the later point, we don't anticipate further questions, but we obviously would be more than happy to ring you back if you'd like to listen to that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Office of General Counsel.
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Hyden, thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. Before you is an agenda document held over from the January 19th open session, 12-05, which consists of two draft advisory opinions responding to a request from New Mexico Voices for Children, a nonprofit corporation. In October 2011, New Mexico Voices Executive Director left New Mexico Voices and became a candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives. New Mexico Voices asks whether a severance payment to its former executive director would violate the Act's prohibition on contributions by corporations to candidates. Draft A concludes that the severance payment to New Mexico Voices' former executive director would not constitute a contribution to a candidate because the severance payment would be made irrespective of his candidacy for Congress. Draft B concludes that New Mexico Voices may not make a severance payment to its former executive director without violating the Act's prohibition on contributions by corporations to candidates because the Commission cannot conclude that the severance payment would be made irrespective of the former executive director's candidacy for Congress. We received no comments on the drafts. Thank you. I would be happy to address any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Hyden. Any questions? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Berger, I have a couple questions just about the practices that New Mexico Voices has employed in the past with respect to severance payments, and obviously the question we have to answer in this particular matter is whether the severance payment is it pronounced Mr. Griego?
Yes, Commissioner, that's how you pronounce it.
Okay. So the question is whether this proposed severance payment to Mr. Griego would be for the purpose of influencing a federal election, and if that's the case, then it would be considered a prohibited corporate contribution. If it's not for the purpose of influencing a federal election, then it's permissible. So that's the standard that we apply here. And in these sorts of situations, we often look at the past practices or the written policy of an organization when making these determinations. And according to your request, you didn't have New Mexico Voices didn't have a written policy, but did have a practice in place for severance payments. Is that correct?
That is, Commissioner.
Okay. And what we need to look at is whether a severance payment, one of the factors we look at is whether the severance payment that is being proposed is consistent with those past practices. It's not necessarily a dispositive consideration, but it certainly is a relevant one. And my first question is, would the proposed severance payment to Mr. Griego be consistent with New Mexico Voice's past practices, and could you give us some specifics about the reasons why or why it isn't?
Yes, it is consistent with the past practices. Mr. Griego started in 2007, and prior to that time, the executive director and the board did not have a consistent practice. They would intermittently provide severance, and when Mr. Griego became executive director, they implemented a more formal or more objective criteria, I guess I should say, whereby if someone departed based on the needs of the organization or what the board felt was in the best interest of the organization, they would provide severance. If an employee departed voluntarily, or if, for instance, New Mexico Voices depends on grant funding for a lot of their programs, and they might have a grant that provides positions for a three-year period, and the person going into that position may know that that's the position that they're taking. If that grant funding ends, the person is terminated but not given severance. So in this case, there were four instances where people were terminated because the board eliminated those positions because either those positions weren't performing as expected or were not within the mission that the board wished to focus its resources, and those people were given severance. Mr. Griego, it's consistent with this practice that he wanted to remain employed, but the board, sort of in the utmost of caution, asked him to resign while he campaigned rather than go on a reduced hourly status, just so that there would be no appearance of impropriety between a 501c3's activities and the activities of its part-time executive director who was campaigning on his off time.
Okay. You mentioned that individuals who've left voluntarily, the four who've been paid severance in the past didn't have a choice as to whether or not they were in essence laid off because of the needs of the organization, and I believe from your request, it's because of there were some sort of organizational changes within New Mexico Voices that entailed laying off these employees. Is that a correct assessment?
We need to maintain some confidentiality of the identity of the people who were terminated, but to the extent you have specific questions that we can answer, we'd, you know, be happy to do that.
Okay. I mean, the main point I was trying to get to is from your request, it appeared as if those who had been given severance in the past were in essence, I don't know if laid off is the right word, but there was a separation because the I think it says if the separation was due to reorganization, organizational changes, or other factors outside the employee's control, some severance was offered. And so you have the standard of things that were within the control of the organization but outside the control of the employee. And do you consider Mr. Griego's separation to be a voluntary one that that was within his control, or an involuntary one that was outside the employee's control?
I consider it to be closer to the involuntarily outside of his control, because it was perfectly legal for him to go on a part-time status or even take a leave of absence to campaign. And that's what he wanted to do, but the board determined that they needed a full separation, again, to avoid any appearance of impropriety as a nonprofit organization. So he didn't choose to leave. I mean, he chose to run for office, but he didn't choose to leave, and there were other alternatives that were available to him to do that without resigning his position.
Okay. He could have stayed with the organization had he not decided to choose to run for Congress. Is that correct?
Yes, he could have.
Okay.
Or he could have taken a leave of absence.
Okay.
Sorry, I should say technically he could have taken a leave of absence. That was not an option for him from the board's perspective.
And compared to the four who received severance before, did they have some sort of choice or was that kind of outside of their control, and then they were going to have to leave due to the needs of the organization?
If I may, I just want to confer with Mr. Martinez. I don't know if anyone is off other position within the organization.
We had one person who the position was available, but it wasn't in her skill set, and she chose not to apply for it.
Oh, yeah, one position that the person could have stayed but chose not to take the position that was offered.
Okay. So there was at least one who was given an opportunity to, it was a little difficult to hear Mr. Martinez, just to confirm, there was someone who was offered a different position within the organization, could have stayed and chose not to, and then when they chose to leave, they were offered severance?
Yes.
Okay. Just a couple of other questions. If Mr. Griego had left not to had not decided to run for Congress, but wanted to take a different a job at at a different nonprofit organization, would New Mexico Voices have offered him a severance in that instance as well?
I don't believe that he had voluntarily left to take another position. Certainly, if the board had asked him to resign, they would have provided severance based on his past performance.
Okay. And, just to reiterate what I said at the outset, that, in order to give you the answer that you are seeking in this particular matter, we need to have some comfort that the reason why a severance payment is being made isn't for influencing a federal election, that there were factors separate and apart from the fact that he was running for Congress that constituted the reasons why severance is being paid. Is there anything further that you can provide to us that would give us that comfort that that this severance wasn't for the purpose of influencing an election?
Well, yes. He was a long-time employee. He was doing great work for the organization. I'll let Mr. Martinez add to this, too. But, the board really would prefer for him to maintain his position as executive director. The severance payment is really just understanding that, similar to its past practices, when someone leaves involuntarily, they are, rewarded for the performance that they achieved at the organization. Again, sort of the fact that they asked him to leave when it was really difficult for them to do so and to be without an executive director was really the basis for why they did that was that they didn't want any appearance of trying to influence a candidate. I mean, you know, if they had wanted to support a candidate, you know, it would have been easier and better for them to keep him as an employee and allow him to maintain a salary and campaign, you know, on a part-time status, or to come back to the organization if he was unsuccessful in his campaigning. But I'll let Mr. Martinez speak for the organization as well.
Okay.
Yeah, Commissioner, Ms. Berger stated exactly what I would have said. The board felt that Mr. Griego had done an exemplary job over his tenure at New Mexico Voices, and, you know, also felt that because he was running for an office, congressional office, that it wasn't in the best interest of the organization for him to stay on as executive director, and therefore they offered him a severance package as part of the, or wanted to offer, or want, or would like to offer him a severance package as part of the separation, and as Ms. Berger said, to reward him for his exemplary service over the years. But we wanted to make sure that there wasn't any conflict or violation, and that's why we come to this.
I certainly appreciate the answers to those questions. I don't have anything further right now.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. Any other questions, Madam Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And let me just say, we really appreciate having you guys on the phone. If you could speak a little bit louder, I know I personally am having a little bit of trouble hearing you. I just have a couple of questions for you. It sounds like one of the options that was floated was maybe he could take a leave of absence or go part-time while he was running for office. It's a pretty small organization. Could you function that way with an extended leave of absence or part-time status for your executive director?
I will answer this versus Sarah Berger. There, Mr. Martinez is acting as the executive director, so he is the operations manager, and he's acting as the executive director. So they are without an executive director, a full-time one, and they're doing a search. So by the time, you know, the primary election comes along, could be the time that it would have been vacant and someone acting in this position anyway. So I think it's sort of the same result would have happened had he taken a leave of absence. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is Troy Martinez, Commissioner. That is correct. I am serving as the acting or interim executive director, and a search, actually the position has been announced and posted for about a month now, and it recently just closed, and there is the hope that a new executive director will be hired within the next month. So it, as Ms. Berger said, it would have been close to about the same amount of time, but I believe that we will have somebody in place at least a couple months prior to the primary.
Have you ever offered an extended leave of absence or part-time to another senior executive in your organization?
Not during my time or that I can recall hearing Mr. Griego ever mention that being an option.
And my final question is, do you consider the offer of severance to Mr. Griego to be a required action of the board or a discretionary action of the board?
I would say it's discretionary.
Thank you again. I appreciate your talking with us and being available.
Commissioner Walther.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Steve Walther. I was wondering on the amount of the severance pay. Was a 3-month amount, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, Commissioner.
Now that, in the previous times you've given a severance pay, has it been for that same amount?
For senior staff, yes. The three instances where a senior person left, it was a 3-month severance. There was one instance where a junior person left, and I believe they were given 2 weeks pay.
And then, do you have anything in your minutes of meetings that would enlighten us as to the way you were phrasing your use of discretion in a case similar to this or like this?
Mr. Martinez was informing me that no, there doesn't seem to be that level of detail in the minutes, just that these matters were presented to the board and the board voted to approve severance.
And then, was there a particular meeting where a decision was made to embark upon a severance plan if it was not voluntary or in the best interest of the corporation?
I'm sorry, Commissioner, are you saying are there minutes that would reflect that?
I understand there's no minutes, but in terms of the formality that went into making this, did it kind of morph into this is what we do now, or was it somebody sit down and decide what it was even though it wasn't in writing?
I believe it was more of an unwritten policy that was really implemented when Mr. Griego took office as executive director. He was, you know, given some discretion to recommend severance or not to recommend severance, and he was the one saying that in the past it was done on a more intermittent basis. It was his effort to more formalize it into this policy of let's offer it to people when they're involuntarily separated beyond their control and when it's, you know, in the best interest of the organization. But again, it was policy.
Was he offered, I wasn't exactly sure exactly what the situation was, but was he offered a extended leave?
No.
Okay. Could he have been? You said it was, I think you said legal, but was it something your company would have done?
Chose not to do that. Yes, but it's technically he could have been, but they chose not to. They thought, you know, New Mexico Voices engages in some amount of advocacy on behalf of children, and they didn't want any appearance that their advocacy would have some influence over or vice versa with a candidate running for office.
I see. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Berger and Mr. Martinez. We really appreciate your joining us today. And as I said earlier, we're going to consider this during a recess, and we'll anticipate voting for the drafts when we reconvene.
Thank you, Commissioners. We appreciate the opportunity to answer your question.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is the Western Representation PAC, Draft Advisory Opinion 2011-28. Vice Chair, we have a late submitted document.
We do, Madam Chair. I move that we suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents so that we may consider agenda document number 12-06B, which is actually draft C, of a proposed answer to this request.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you. Mr. Buckley?
Thank you, Chair Hunter. Good morning, Commissioners. Since the January 19th open session, a new draft response has been created. This draft corrects certain statements in the previous two drafts and seeks to harmonize the analyses in those two drafts. Like the previous two drafts, draft C concludes that the committee may not exclude the cost to place each independent expenditure ad on Facebook from its aggregation of costs for independent expenditures made with respect to given elections, and also concludes that the committee must attribute the cost of its independent expenditure Facebook ads to individual state primary presidential elections on its monthly reports. The commission received one comment on draft C, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Mr. Backer is in the audience with us today. Thank you for coming, but I don't believe we have any questions for him. Please let me know if that changes or if I've got that wrong. If not, do we have any questions, comments? But Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I intend to support Draft C. I just have a comment on the comment. Sort of an odd statement in there that asserts for something for the commission, which is kind of an odd thing for a commenter to do. The commenter says, the commission appreciates the significant reporting burdens that such reporting may impose, which likely constitutes an unconstitutional burden on the committee's free speech. I'm not sure on what basis the commenter believes that to be the view of the commission, but I just wish to state for myself that I do not believe that it's an unconstitutional burden. And in fact, I think the courts have already spoken to the not only the constitutionality but the importance of timely disclosure.
Any other comments? Commissioner McGann.
Thanks. Yeah, it's funny. When I read the comment, I pulled the same sentence, and I thought, well, that's kind of cool. I guess I won the day. But I guess I didn't. It's a tough one because you're talking about, you know, single-page reporting that has been upheld. And I don't think as applied have made it to the Supremes, but people have toyed with them in lower courts. And it's a tough one. And I think the draft, which is draft, what are we up to now? C? C is for cookie. That's good enough for me. Watching odd TV shows now that I haven't watched in years. Getting ahead of the curve. I'm pre-screening. See how Sesame Street has changed since back in the day. Can't be too careful. But it's okay, I guess. He won't be able to see Hillary the movie on pay-per-view. Oh, yes, he will now. Yes, he will. That was too hot for pay-per-view. You know, it's tough because you have a reporting requirement, and at some point there is going to be the case that comes along that says that it's too much and too complicated and therefore too burdensome. It's tough to do that in the context of an AO, and even if we were going to pretend we have black robes on, I'm not sure I have in front of me enough to say this is the case. Maybe it's buried in here somewhere, but I can't seem to do much here other than to say, look, you have a reporting regime. The commission has anticipated this to a certain extent where you can do an estimate. The problem there is you may have over-reporting. It may be over-inclusive, under-inclusive, all that stuff. But I don't see it here, and I feel like my hands are tied to a certain extent. Because we're not saying what I think some would wish us to say, which is you have to report everything down to the penny with metaphysical accuracy. Otherwise, you're filing a false report, and then we're going to send you across the street. That's just not how the regs reflect it in reality, and that's just not what we're doing. I mean, we are, I think, showing some flexibility. I think the commission has over the years, but at a certain point, there is this reporting obligation. And to me, the central question of can a political committee just show it on their monthly or quarterly and not do an IE report, the answer to that's no. You have to still do an IE report. So to me, the question is how do you make this work? I think we've all taken a look at some other committees who do these kinds of ads, and it does seem like other committees are breaking it down to a certain degree. So it doesn't seem as if it's impossible. Now, impossibility is not the standard. At some point, it's too much of a burden. But it's not easy. But not easy doesn't make it unconstitutional. But if it is too hard, that does make it unconstitutional, I suppose. I wish I could do more. I don't feel I can. I think draft C is, at this point, the best we can do given the facts presented. So I just wanted to put that on the record and say, you know, I don't, you know, left to my personal devices, I agree with the concerns raised in the comments. I'm just not sure that it's something that matters to the commission sitting here with a statute and a set of regs that really have not had problems in the courts, so to speak. And someday they may. New technologies, the way things are moving. You know, when the statute was passed in the mid-70s, it was a simpler regime. You know, you had a TV ad, maybe you had some mail. Okay, you do a report. This becomes a lot more of an accounting burden. I hear you, I'm not sure that we're to the point where the commission can say, oh, yeah, obviously this is a problem. We need to redo everything and redo it in an AO. As much as I personally wish we could simplify, we can only simplify the reg book as much as the statute is simplified, and the statute requires a report. And I'm not sure we have a lot of flexibility to carve that up all that much. If at all, we can interpret the statute, and I think we're doing that in an AO in a way that lets people still do what they want to do. And sure, there's a regulatory burden, no question about it. Whether the commission appreciates it in the terms that the requester says it or not, really, it is not particularly relevant. I certainly appreciate it. Anybody who's done it has appreciated it, but that's not enough to, in the context of an AO, do something different. So I don't like C, but when compared to all the other options, it seems to be good enough for me. Thanks.
So I've tied it back in.
Vice Chair's laughing.
I have very fond memories of watching Sesame Street with my children.
Any other questions or comments? Is there a motion? Oh, I just want to say thank you to OGC for helping put together Draft C, and also to the Reports Analysis Division.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission adopt Draft C, a draft response to the request of the Western Representation PAC.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it, 6-0. Thank you. Thank you. We will take a recess and reconvene at 11:15. Thank you. The meeting will reconvene, meeting of Thursday, February 2nd, 2012. Thank you for your patience. We've now had an opportunity to consider some the discussion that we had earlier today and have some additional thoughts on the stand ladder AO, which is what we'll move on to now. Draft Advisory Opinion 2011-24, Louder Solutions, doing business as StanLouder.com. Does the Office of General Counsel have an update? Ms. Selenkoff.
Thank you, Chair Hunter, and good morning, Commissioners. We don't have an update. You have for consideration the two addenda documents held over from the January 12th and January 19th meetings, agenda documents 1201 and 1201A. The documents contain three draft responses to the advisory opinion request by Louder Solutions, LLC, doing business at StanLouder.com. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the third meeting at which we've considered this request, and draft B that we originally considered, I mentioned before that a previous meeting that I supported that. This has been a tricky one, I think, for everybody. First of all, congratulate the requester for formulating the best law school exam question that that was probably never actually submitted in law school. But this really did create some very difficult questions for us to answer. I mean, it was reflected in the earlier drafts where you had one draft saying that the person responsible for the speech are those who are financing the speech. Another draft that said Stan Louder's speech, and another draft that said it's the content creator's speech. And because of the unique nature of this organization and how it really is sui generis and how to put it in a particular legal box and to figure out precisely what the legal standards were that apply to it proved to be, a very difficult question. I think that there's been I don't think it's an overstatement to say that there have been extraordinary efforts put in on the commissioner level and especially on the EA level, doing some shuttle diplomacy, trying to figure out a way to thread this needle, to find a place where everyone felt comfortable. Because, I think everyone had concerns about, because of the unique nature of this organization, that was there the potential of creating a conclusion here that could result in some unintended consequences down the road that could have been fairly significant. But it looks like we aren't going to be able to answer the first three questions. We will be able to answer the fourth question on independent expenditure only, whether Stand Louder could become an independent expenditure only political committee. I just wanted to state this, just kind of get this background out for the effort, that there have been great efforts that have been made to try to get a consensus opinion on this. It doesn't look like it's going to work out, but sometimes, and maybe fairly so, the press criticizes the commission for not playing well in school together. And in this instance, I think there really was an effort on all parts to try to find a way to make this work, and we just haven't been able to find the magic bullet that can slay this beast. And so, unfortunately, that's where we are. But and it's not satisfying, and we apologize to the requester that we couldn't give them a more definitive answer. But I think that that's where things stand at the time being.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to echo Commissioner Peterson's views that we really did work hard on this and try to come to a solution, and no one worked harder than Commissioner Peterson and his staff to try to snatch victory out of the jaws of defeat, and we thought we had it, and it slipped away from us. In addition to the three drafts that we put on the public record, there were at least three other drafts that, were circulated back and forth trying to figure out, would this work, would this work? The problem is that it is sui generis what you want to do. It's our regulations and the statute contemplate rules that apply to speakers, and they contemplate rules that apply to vendors, but you're sort of halfway in between, and we couldn't quite figure out which box to put you in and what the ramifications of that would be. And for some of us, the answers to the questions were very much intertwined. So it looked for a while like there might be a consensus developing on more than just four, but the problem was that the answer to three for some of us was also dependent on the answer to one, because the question of whose name is on the disclaimer is very much connected for some of us to whether there's a potential for creating a political committee here. If indeed this really is Stan Louder's speech, because you acquire it and you get all the rights to it and nobody else has the authority to muck with it and you're going to make the decisions on whether to place it, then it seems to some of us that if it turns out, and nobody including you knows at this point how this would play out, but if it were to turn out that the majority of the speech that was the majority of the ads that were run by Stan Louder were express advocacy ads that advocated the election or defeat of federal candidates, then if that is your speech and the majority of, if all you're doing is running ads and the majority of those ads are express advocacy, seems to some of us that makes you a political committee. You know, I think other commissioners thought it was closer to the vendor scenario and that the commercial purpose would lead to a different kind of result. But the fact that we don't really know at this point, and no one knows exactly how it's going to play out, seemed to some of us that in a presidential election year, this kind of a platform might well be heavily used by people who are trying to put out messages about the election. So that would not be an unforeseen consequence. And we didn't, even though right now, you know, at the beginning, it doesn't look like you're a political committee, some of us could foresee that easily it would be the result of what you're contemplating to do, or could be. And so it made it very difficult for us to say, well, yes, you are a political committee. No, you aren't a political committee, and you're not a political committee, and it's okay for you to have disclaimers that just say Stand Louder is the source of this advertising. You know, and there were concerns about, and I appreciate that you were trying to be transparent about this, that you thought you came up with a model that would allow for a lot of transparency, but it just wasn't clear how all these pieces were going to fit together. And as Commissioner Peterson said, we tried very hard to come up with something that everybody would feel comfortable, not only in, it's not a lack of faith in you and what you want to do, it's that there's the potential for unforeseen consequences. We just don't know what other folks might do based on this advisory opinion. And some of us may have been more concerned about unintentionally green-lighting things that we wouldn't be comfortable with. Some of us may have been more concerned about unintentionally red-lighting things that we wouldn't be comfortable with. But, you know, the bottom line was we just couldn't pull it together on something that we could get four votes for. So I regret that. We did try very hard. But at least we know that you can get an answer on question four. And I'd be happy to make a motion whenever it is appropriate to do so, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Commissioner Walther?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I echo both of those comments. You know, we get confronted sometimes with advisory opinion requests, and it's a no-brainer for either all of us or three of us. But when we try really hard to put it together, it means that we're all real close in a lot of ways. And if we're all working on just the same pieces of the puzzle, sometimes you can do it. And if we all have different pieces and we're trying to still put them together, it seems like it's even harder. I think that was the case here. For me, I wanted to congratulate the way you put it together. It was really quite a very good job. I mean, it had us going on this, and a very attractive approach to consider. For me, I had some issues in addition to some of the ones that we were tinkering with back and forth with. Maybe it's important for me in a couple of areas outside of some of what we're talking about in terms of this, but the foreign investment thing, it seemed to me I would want to have, especially in these days where money is from corporations is flowing freely, to have some clear-cut methodology by which it could not, foreign money couldn't seep through the cracks. Here you are saying all the correct things about what your intent is, but I'm worried about not having a greater amount of detail with respect to that, plus the methodology in terms of being able to identify more about the recipient from corporate funding. In this particular case, there's some language, for example, that said we would not accept money from a foreign national or from foreign corporations, and that's all well and good, but there are a variety of other things we could be not only by it, but be controlled by some of the modifying language to tighten it up, enough to scare off people from giving it a try. It could be things, for example, you can have a domestic corporation that's owned totally by foreign people, or at least funded, and there would be no way of ever knowing one way or the other where is that money coming from. I'm not saying you would have to audit, but there should be some, for me, in this Post-Citizens United world, it would be hard to get me to vote for something without more specificity. The other area that I had some concern is the same thing we're all troubled with, and that is what happens when you have a significant amount of funding in there. The disclaimer only is from Stan Lauder, where there could be some scenarios that I think could be subject to abuse, where you've got one creator and you've got the creator provides 50% or maybe 100% of the funding, puts in 50 grand or 100 grand, and the disclaimer is still Stan Lauder, and it's still the creator's money or the creator's idea, or we're not following the money well. And so if there was some way of saying, for example, in a disclaimer in a case where there was, and I'm just ruminating here, throwing out some of the things that concern me, you have a major funder, big ad, somebody puts in 50% of the money or 60% or a heck of a lot, and they escape, maybe reporting later, but they escape the disclaimer responsibility, which sometimes can be very, very important. And if there was a way to add a person or an entity in saying X and Y is responsible for the ad, there may be ways to deal with it, but presented before us, those situations aren't addressed, and it's hard for us to go out and begin to divine ways to make it work that are outside the parameters of the request. Then we're really getting into being a regulatory entity in particular AO. So it's just, for me, it was hard to moving forward on it as it stands.
Any other comments? Mr. McGann?
When we get to the point where there's not enough votes to give an answer, I just want to feel it, at least owe it to the requester, to at least state kind of where I am, because then you have to kind of guess where everyone is, and there's no reason to guess. We're here. We can say it. This is, as everyone said, this is not an easy one, and I think Commissioner Peterson's right. If there's an election law class, this is a great exam question because it raises many, many subtle issues. Unfortunately, from the requester's point of view, I doubt the requester cares much about all that. They want to do what they want to do, and they want to know can they do it, and if so, how, because I think everyone agrees you can certainly do all this. The problem is what disclaimer do you put on the ads and what reports do you have to file? But if you don't know that, that may discourage you from doing it, and that would be unfortunate. So maybe we can still at least give you some sense, and at least you know if you really want to sign up for the full Monty of FEC reporting, you can always do that. Right? That's not much of an answer. That's kind of an obvious yes. If you really want to sign up, I guess we always take your reports and all that. But you know, last meeting I thought that there was really two ways, and the more I thought about it, there's really three ways this plays out analytically. The first is when you put up the ad, whose disclaimer is on the ad? First, there are two issues. It's whose disclaimer is on the ad, and then what does that mean for the second question? And if you go down the road that it's Stan Lauder's speech because the money's coming from their bank account, they're doing the legal scrub, they're assuming liability for the content, and all that, that I think allows you to say, well, the disclaimer can be paid for by Stan Lauder, not each individual donor or contributor, right? Because that would be kind of unwieldy. But once you go down that road and sort of say it's Stan Lauder's speech, so to speak, you do have the political committee issue flaring up, which is where some commissioners, you've already discussed, it's tough to sit here today and say, you know, on these facts you're not. That's actually easy to say, but after our discussion, we're not sure whether this is going to take off and how much ads are going to be express advocacy versus other things, and then you get into are there other factors and, you know, major purposes case by case, and, well, who knows, because you don't have enough facts and what factors do we consider, and we could sit up here all day and debate that, and it'll only be more money. But the issue does arise, and I agree that you could end up being a political committee if you go down this analytical road. Second way to do it is you it's not a Stan Lauder ad. You have to figure out a way to make a disclaimer that reflects who's actually paying for the ad, who produced the ad, or some hybrid of the two. And then if that's the case, you look a lot like a consultant or a vendor, and there's really no way you can be a political committee ever, because you are at that point sort of a glorified media buyer that's also legal scrub, and you're very much a functionary at that point, not content, which got me thinking about the third way, which is merely because the disclaimer is paid for by Stan Lauder. Does that necessarily make it your speech for purposes of political committee? And maybe it doesn't, because although, you know, the caricature of Supreme Court precedent is they've said money is speech, that's not really how the law plays out. Money supports speech, but it's not necessarily the same thing. And you think about the stand by your ad requirements that are now in the law. Committee pays for the ad, but the candidate also has to say he's responsible for the content. So they do distinguish between two. So even though Stan Lauder's taking the money, placing the ad and all that, and it's coming out of their bank account and they're doing the legal scrub and all the things that I had really come down on earlier thinking that made it Stan Lauder's speech, it still is ultimately, and you want it to be ultimately, the speech of the person who produces the ad, because you're trying to get more of a grassroots small fish, so to speak, involved. So it's not Stan Lauder Inc. Lauder Solutions LLC speech. It's still the people's speech. So if that's the case, then you don't become a political committee. But that takes some, I think, some fancy footwork in the first stage on the disclaimer stage, which I think I could sort of play that hopscotch, but that's tough to do, because you are essentially having a disclaimer that says paid for by one party and then saying it's not really their speech for the other part of the analysis, which is political committee, which maybe that's works because political committee has, you know, constitutional limitations, and the paid for by disclaimer has never really been attacked on constitutional grounds in a way that made a whole lot of sense. So that's a long way of saying I think there's three ways to go down. I'm actually, the more I think about it, on the third way, because I don't think that Stan Lauder is a political committee. Because I think of a couple of examples. I mean, say you're a third-party group and you're doing a TV ad and you put it on television. Now, the TV station, it's not their speech. They're not paying for it, but if there's a lawsuit, they end up being liable for the content. Now, there may be an interesting defense pointing of fingers over who has insurance coverage, but at the end of the day, TV stations are liable for their content if it's not a candidate use. So merely because you're assuming liability doesn't make you responsible for the speech in other areas, right? So it's a convoluted way of saying I can think of a lot of examples where it only makes it more complicated, not less complicated. I mean, the vice chair, I think, hit it on the head. You're not squarely the traditional media buyer consultant. You're not squarely a speech generator. You're both. And we get into this back and forth. And when we get into the back and forth with six people, everybody's doing the back and forth slightly differently. And it's not a case where it's the typical 3-3, you know, big splash on some ideological divide. There's a little bit of that on what this may mean political committee-wise down the road, but for your purposes, again, you don't care about that. I think the votes come down a little bit weirder, and that's why I'm saying where I am. I think if you do the IE report and do the reporting and all that as a Stan Lauder, that's fine. I don't think you become a political committee, but I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of votes for that. There may be curiosity on that theory, and I frankly haven't teased it out much myself because I just kind of thought about it as I was reading various shuttle diplomacy, you know, drafts and people trying to figure out where everyone is that you can actually have a third way to do this, which gets you a clean answer, but unfortunately, one, it doesn't make a lot of sense to the point where I can explain it in English, so no one else is going to understand it. But two, there's just not going to be the votes for that either. But to the extent you're counting votes on enforcement, if you do the reports and you do the IE reports and your disclaimers stand louder, that's cool with me. I don't think you're a political committee. There's a hypothetical that what if only you do is 100% express advocacy? I'd come down and think you're still basically a glorified media placement firm at that point. I wouldn't say you're a political committee. But that's me. Not everyone's there.
Commissioner Bauer.
Thank you. I think it's, you know,
great that we worked really hard on this, and I agree that Commissioner Peterson's staff were here late last night trying their very best, and I do appreciate that, but I'm guessing that's of no comfort to a requester who's asked a very specific question. And yes, it is hard, and it's been a really long time since I've sat in a law school classroom, and if you were interested in law school teaching, this might be, you know, all this might be useful to you. But I think it's really unfortunate that we're not able to give you an answer today. I think I want to thank you for providing the answers to our questions during our sessions. They were really helpful to me in getting me to a place where I can't do hopscotch as well as apparently one of my colleagues. I think that you have demonstrated to us that based on the business model you're proposing, that you are going to take responsibility for these ads, take control over them once they've been selected by this formula that you've developed. And so the disclaimer that you proposed probably makes some sense in that regime. But the caveat of all of this is that, of course, the users get to select which ads. And so you don't have any ability to predict today for us what those ads might look like in terms of what actually gets aired. And I share Commissioner Weintraub's view that those things are very tied, because if you're taking responsibility for and have control for that speech, I think it is Stan Lauer's speech, and then that does raise the issue of what happens further down the road. And while we are able, you know, we wouldn't have any basis to determine that you are a political committee today, given what your users might do, that is an issue that I think squarely arises, and those concerns are tied into what the right disclaimer is. So unfortunately, it looks like we're only going to be able to answer question four, but so you have some additional information about what others are thinking in terms of as you proceed and how you want to proceed with less of an answer than you would like. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I think draft B, from my perspective, is closest to what I've been thinking on this matter. And I think you could probably read it to go along with some of what Commissioner McGann was saying, which is Stan Lauer can use their own name for the disclaimer, but that may not necessarily mean that it's their speech. And therefore, the possibility of becoming a political committee is much more remote. And in my view, it's not possible based on your model, even if you do all independent expenditures, as Commissioner McGann suggests. So that's where I am. And I, too, wanted to thank Mr. Call and Mr. Hennick for coming to three different meetings. We really appreciate it. And your answers to all of our questions at a previous meeting were incredibly helpful. Does anybody else have any other questions or comments? Is there a motion?
Am I reckoning?
Oh, yes. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Didn't want to
jump the gun.
Right. I move that we direct the Office of General Counsel to prepare a draft for a tally vote for us that we would be able to vote on by tomorrow, which I believe is the deadline on this, and that this draft should incorporate the background section based on the draft that was circulated last night by Commissioner Peterson's office at, I believe, 5:59 p.m., that it would incorporate the answer to question four that is found in draft B, except that, and this isn't really a substantive change, the answer, we would delete the sentence on page 13, lines 2 to 4, which repeats part of the sentence from page 12, lines 4 to 7, but not all of it. We didn't want to create any confusion by saying one thing in one place and one thing something someplace else. And this draft should also sadly reflect that we could not agree on the answers to questions 1 through 3. I think it might be prudent to circulate that first by email so we can take a look at it and then circulate it again for a short tally so that we can give whatever answer we can give to the requester by tomorrow.
Sure. And just for the purpose, for the benefit of the requester, the what you mentioned, the factual background section, it's not any substantive change.
No. Okay. It's just we've had various iterations of this. There have been, as I said, at least 6 different versions of this floating around this office. So that's just to give OGC guidelines on which draft to look at so they don't have to try pulling it out of 6 different drafts.
And as the vice chair noted, it's draft B, which was part of the public record before, that we're talking about in question 4.
Right.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it 6-0. Thank you very much.
So that still goes into stats as a 6-0.
Something like that.
Yeah.
The next matter on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2011-27, New Mexico Voices. And at this time, we will see who we get on the phone.
May I please speak with Ms. Berger? This is Sean Worth calling from the Federal Election Commission.
Ms. Berger had to attend to another call, so this is Debbie Toppin. I'm going to listen.
Okay, thank you very much. We are ready to begin your advisory opinion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Tope, and thank you for being willing to stand in for Ms. Berger. As you know, we took a recess in the meeting, and we are back now prepared to vote for the drafts that were made public at a previous meeting for this draft advisory, for this advisory opinion. Is there any comment or any motions? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am going to vote for... I'm prepared to vote for draft A, which answers the question that the proposed payment to Mr. Griego would not result in a contribution. I greatly appreciate Ms. Berger and Mr. Martinez answering my questions and the questions of the rest of the commissioners earlier today. And I think after hearing their answers, I'm more convinced that the proposed severance payment is not for the purpose of influencing an election, that there were factors separate and apart from the fact that Mr. Griego was becoming a candidate for Congress that led to their decision to make the severance payment, including, among other things, that they had previously had employees who were, during, as a result of a reorganization, were still allowed to stay with the organization, but so they had a choice to stay, but opted not to, which seems analogous to the situation that we have here, where Mr. Griego was given the option to stay, but would have had to forego his run for Congress. So I think that from the past practices of this organization, I think that can be shown that what is happening here isn't for the purpose of influencing an election, and for that reason, I'm comfortable supporting draft A, which reflects that conclusion. And at the appropriate time, I'll be happy to make a motion in support of that draft.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Commissioner Weintraub, or Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't object to being called a commissioner. I am still a commissioner. I'm going to be sadly disagreeing with my colleague and supporting draft B. I think this is one where reasonable minds could disagree. This issue has come up before in my tenure, and I have taken the position then, and I'm sticking with it, that in these employment situations, that where there is not a written policy in effect that authorizes the severance, and it is within the discretion of the organization to grant it or not grant it, that it's very difficult to say that when the payments are irrespective of the candidacy and when they aren't. And I do have this difference with my colleague in that it's not just a question of whether it's for the purpose of influencing an election, but under our personal use restrictions, if a salary-type payment is subject to a regulation that says that the payment has to be made irrespective of the candidacy. And it seems like the facts in this case make clear to me that it actually isn't irrespective of the candidacy. It's because of the candidacy that we're kind of the organization and Mr. Griego find themselves in this situation. I think, you know, the organization is trying to do the right thing. They're trying to do the right thing under the law. They're trying to do the right thing by their employee. They state in their request that the board believed it was in the organization's best interest to have Mr. Griego resign in order to avoid any appearance that the organization could influence Mr. Griego's campaign messaging or platform. And, you know, that to me is not irrespective of the candidacy. The only time that the commission has approved this kind of request in the past without a formal written policy was in the 2004-08 advisory opinion to the American Sugarcane League. That was a 4-2 decision. I voted against it. Commissioner McDonald, who was the fourth vote, issued a statement pointing out that he normally would insist on a formal written policy and viewed his vote in that case as a very limited exception to that normal principle. And in that case, there was no employee manual at all. It was an even smaller organization than this, and there was no they just didn't have written employment policies. In this case, there are written employment. There is a written employment manual. It doesn't address severance. And as the requester said this morning, this is really a discretionary decision of the board. So, I like I said, I think reasonable minds could agree or disagree on the answer to this, but I'll be supporting Draft B.
Any other comment? Commissioner Walther?
I'm going to join Commissioner Peterson on this one. I think that, and I've wavered on this because for the reasons stated by the Vice Chair, but we have one incident where we have done this, and I would share the views of former Commissioner McDonald in terms of how I view this exception, but we have a situation where I don't think, especially after the telephone conversation, there was no doubt in my mind that they felt that it was in the best interest of the corporation, not because he was running for office, but because they are the ones that also have their own advocacy issues and didn't want to confuse those with or any, you know, affect those. By that, and it seems to me that the good faith decision to be willing to give a bonus in his case or severance is very genuine and not outside. It's something that's not directly in point with what they've done, but it's close enough for me.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you. I will be supporting Draft B. I think the challenge here is that we have regulations that cover employment-related compensation and when those payments can be considered to be done irrespective of the candidacy and thus are permissible. And I go back a little bit earlier. I wasn't at the commission in 2004 when the American Sugarcane League was decided. It's not entirely clear to me that severance fits within what is contemplated by the regulation for compensation at the outset. It doesn't fit as neatly in there. And I don't think that I would have probably joined the majority in the AO, American Sugarcane League, for that reason and for some others. But I do respect the fact that the commission has looked at severance in the past and consider that to be, at least in one instance, a permissible under this this regulation. So turning to the specific proposal for severance in this case, there are two factors that give me pause. As Commissioner Weintraub mentioned, there's no written policy here, so it is exclusively in the determination and the discretion of the board. And the decision that gives rise to this severance proposal was
has to be made, as the prior AOs indicate, based on factors not exclusively tied to services provided by the employee. Or rather, if it is based on factors not exclusively tied to services, then in the past, in another prior decision related to compensation, 2000-1, the commission determined that partial compensation was not permissible. So looking at our prior opinions and the regulations themselves, I think the challenge here is the requester states that the board considered the impact of on the organization of the candidacy when it determined he should separate and they would pay him a severance. And this seems to fit squarely into that concern about basing the severance on factors not exclusively tied to the services provided by the employee. So I agree this is a challenge, and I think reasonable minds could differ. And I certainly take the organization at its word that it made this decision to avoid any issues given the nature of its work. And that's entirely within the board's discretion to determine what's in the interest of its own organization. I wouldn't question that. But the question for us is whether this severance proposal fits the regulatory framework for permissible compensation. And my reading of the regulation and the prior commission opinions, it does not. So I will be supporting draft B.
Any other comment or motions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of...
I would ask my colleague to yield because your motion is going to pass and mine is going to fail, but mine will be moot if yours goes first.
I will gladly defer to the Vice Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I move approval of draft B.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion fails 2-4, with a commissioner, with the vice chair and Commissioner Bowerly voting in favor and the others voting against. Any other motions? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of draft A as set forth in agenda document number 12-01.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion passes 4-2. Thank you. Mr. Palmer, are there any management and administrative matters to discuss?
Madam Chair, there are none.
Hearing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tobe.
Thank you.